Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, let's talk today about making money. We're going to be smarter, do everything better, and live happily ever after.
Well, there you go. See, now I like the happily ever after. I like that little addition. That's nice.
Yeah.
All right. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Is there anything that needs to happen that people should be aware of?
Well, we need to, if everybody doesn't have an account with us, they need to get one. It doesn't matter if they're doing life settlements. You know, they need an account at Nevada Trust in order to do that. If they're doing annuities, they need an account with us. So whichever way. And there's a lot of people going to retire. We know that we're already doing some retirement strategies for some people. So if you are going to be retiring, you need to call us at the number we just gave you. Set up an appointment. Let's see what we can do for you. If you've got an IRA, if you've got a Roth IRA, same thing. Or if you've got a 401k that you want to transfer out of the company that you're retiring from. And remember, they're going to do your vacation pay, whatever you didn't use, whatever medical you didn't use, and then your 401k, all that will be added together, and that's what you get.
Hmm. How far in advance, whether somebody's going to retire, you know, at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, or if they're looking at, like, the end of the year for retirement, how far in advance should somebody start to actually make plans to move things around and get things where they need to be?
What we've been doing is about 2 months out.
Okay.
Before you retire. And that gives us plenty of time to do the application, set up the account, and look and see what we're dealing with. If we're dealing with a 401k, we have to give them notice. If it's an IRA, that's a different story. It can just be rolled over direct, and it depends if it's just coming out of your bank account or if it's a joint account or if you have an account and your wife has one. We do a lot where the husband does his and the wife does hers. They're retiring about the same time. But a lot of people, the wife is younger, and she may not retire for 5 or 6 years.
What would happen, and I don't even know if this is even a thing, but just kind of like looking at the big picture and kind of curious about the big process, what would happen if, say, somebody's been at a job for a while and they're making their plans to move things around for retirement, but then they had maybe some other job or two several years ago with 401ks back there that they had maybe forgotten about? Do they need to loop those into the process as well, or how does that work?
Yes, you do, because remember, when you have a forgotten 401k to company, they do not want to keep that 401k for you, and they want to get it out of there. You've left, they want your 401k out of there. Every once in a while, we'll have somebody that is forgotten about. You know, they worked for the city, or they worked for the county, or, you know, a construction company. And when they left, they took that last paycheck and left, and they forgot about the 401k, and no one said anything. And some companies will tell you right then, well, you need to move it as you leave. But then sometimes they forget to tell you. And so you find out 5 years later that you've got another 401k at a different company. And that can be rolled over anytime. You don't have to wait till you retire to roll that over. You can roll that over now.
Do companies, if say something had, you know, I don't know, somebody, it fell through the cracks, say. Somebody forgot to tell somebody, they forgot they had it, they moved on to another job, forgot it. At some point, does somebody have to tell the employee, or is it the employee's responsibility to go back and say?
It's the employee's responsibility to reach out and transfer that over.
Okay.
And we can do that for them. We do it every day. You know, we can get that transfer paper done, figure out what kind of investment they want to make, and get it done. And you don't have to wait till you retire to move an old 401k or an old IRA.
Now, for prepping for retirement, and I know we talk about this a lot of times, I want to kind of look at the big picture as people, you know, look at this year and they're saying, okay, here's where I'm going to be in the next 12 months. I want to retire in 10 months, or I want to, wherever they are, as they start thinking about maybe getting things moved over, building their wealth is part of the process. Hopefully, people already have their house paid, they have their cars paid, they have all these things already done. So now it's really just a matter of, okay, how much am I going to need to live on? How do I get to that point if they're not already there? Where does that fall into, I guess, the whole planning as far as investments, things like that? How does it all relate together?
Well, it depends who they are, what they're going to do. And we have a lot of people that I'll say, are you going to stay in Midland, Odessa, or Amarillo, or Lubbock, or wherever? And they'll say, absolutely not. You know, I'm selling my house here. I'm moving to either Granbury, which a lot of them do. A lot of them are moving to the Hill Country, and then East Texas. I don't have as many moving to East Texas to the lakes there. Usually it's either Granbury to Pecan Plantation, or it's to the Hill Country. And then some of them have children in a different location, so they're moving closer to them. That happens all the time. Some people have moved to Cleburne, right outside of Fort Worth. I've got several there. And so you never know where their family is or what interests they have around the state where they want to be. So they'll tell us, you know, usually they'll say, okay, I'm moving so-and-so. I've bought a house there. I've sold my house here, or I'm selling my house here.
Okay.
Sometimes they don't have the house sold. They're just fixing to list it. And it depends. I've had people build a house also, and that takes a little time. I've got another couple that I'm doing a deal with, and they're moving to their ranch. And not a lot of people move to a ranch at this age, but some of them do. Then I've got some people that, after they retired, they bought a ranch because they were so bored.
They needed something to do, driving the wife crazy. You need
That's
to get busy.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it gets kind of crowded after you have worked all your life, then you're both home. It doesn't work out too well.
No, I bet.
You've got to have something to do. You know, if it's out in the shop working, creating something, or if you have a side business, something that keeps you out of that house.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need it.
There's an adjustment
period.
They
do not want you underfoot all day, let me tell you.
No. No.
Oh.
I'm sure.
That's not their idea of retirement. Then we have a lot of golfers. A lot of men play golf. So that gets them out of the house.
Mm.
Sometimes the husband and wife play together, but usually it's another man or a group of men they play with. We had some people there in Midland when they retired. The guy built clocks.
Oh.
And then he played golf in the morning and built clocks in the afternoon and night. He built a lot of really fine clocks. But he played golf every day.
Wow. Well, I would imagine getting into that kind of a routine is not only good to keep you busy, but also it's a nice relaxing routine as opposed to rushing into maybe an office or dealing with, you know, somebody on the phone or problems at work. You know, you're doing your own thing on your own time. I would imagine it's a scheduled, regimented, fulfilling, relaxed kind of retirement. Sounds ideal.
That's right. And everybody needs something to do because remember, you've got up and went to work every day of your life.
Yeah.
So you were busy 8 hours a day, but you were on the phone all the time. You were on your computer. That's why when we offer an investment for them, lots of times they don't even answer their email. We have to send them a text to get them to go and look at the email because they're tired of texts. They're tired of phones. They're tired of everything.
I hadn't thought of that.
They are. And a lot of them, we have to send them a text and say, go look at your email, please. And then they will, but not until we ask them to. They don't want to do it. They've spent too many years working, having to answer the phone every day of their life.
Yeah.
And they had to be on the computer. Now we have the farmers. We have a lot of farmers there with us. And they're out on a tractor all day, so they, their perspective is a little different, you know. they're not as uptight as other people.
Yeah. I would imagine after being behind a computer screen for years and years and years, that's the last thing you want to do. I don't want to see another computer for the rest of my life.
I'm afraid that's true. That's why they go and buy ranches.
Yeah.
They buy a small business. They do all kinds of things. Or we've got several that have a big shop, and they build things, do things with their hands. And it keeps them occupied, keeps them out of the house.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let me ask you about, like, retirement spending. Because I know we're talking about, you know, people moving, selling their house, buying a house, building a house, doing all these things. When people first retire, do a lot of them blow a ton of money on, like, world travels or things like that and then build a house?
A lot of them have traveled quite a bit during their lifetime. Now, they may take some small trips or a 25th anniversary to Spain or Italy or something. But most of them are not taking worldwide trips anymore. They've already done all that. They've been to Alaska. They've done all these fun things, you know. And then some of them are raising their grandchildren. You'd be surprised how many people that we have as clients that something's happened to their children and they're raising the grandchildren.
Hmm. Hadn't thought about that either.
They are. And so their perspective is different than the other people. What they intend to do in retirement is a little bit different because they've got a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old that they're raising. We had one client, he's dead now, that he married a younger woman when he was like 70. And he had a little 6-year-old boy he was raising.
Oh, wow.
In his 70s. And it was tough because that little 6-year-old kept him running, you know?
Yeah.
They don't want you just sitting in a chair. You know, a 6-year-old wants to play and they're active. So, you know, you've got to be able to keep up with them.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So when people, I think what I'm kind of getting at is when people retire, how much, and I know everybody's different, but how much, generally speaking, do people need at retirement day? So say they retired on Friday. When they wake up on Monday, like, what's the, do they need a lump sum for something, or do they just go about their?
Well, what they usually do, let's say they've got $800,000. In their 401k, they'll transfer that to us, and they may keep out $50,000 or $60,000 for that first year. And then some of them say, you know, we have other money, we're not going to need it for a year or two, so they're going to just let it set and draw interest. Of course, they're going to get that bonus if it's an annuity. You know, you're going to get that 14% every year that you put money in for 3 years. So, you know, that takes care of a lot of interest right there that you're going to get. So it depends, you know, if you're doing life settlements or if you're doing annuities. If you're doing annuities, you're doing it for income, usually. And it may not be this year or next year. It may be 3 years out. Or I've got some people that say, next year I want to take $50,000 a year out. And then I find out, they say, Faye, it's a little too much. I don't want to take quite that much out. So, you know, you can do it a lot of different ways, and you can change it. If you start out and you're not taking enough money, you can take more. Or if you say, I don't really need that much, you can decrease it. And then let's talk about life settlement. If you're doing a life settlement, you're doing it for the interest. So if, let's say that you are doing a life settlement. It's going to pay in 2 years 24%. So you're waiting for that. And then you've got several others that may be 19 months or 30 months. And the premium, let's say, is $700 on $1 million.
Mm.
So it's not hardly anything.
Yeah.
So you always need to know how much the premium is and if you can get hurt. And all the ones we've done in the last few years have low, low premiums.
So then is it a safe general assumption, I know people are different, but generally speaking, is it safe to say that probably most people do life settlements up until retirement, and then after retirement, they switch over to annuities? Is that a fair?
Usually they do. Now, we have some people that have both. They've got, you know, the life settlement for the cash, for the interest, and then they've got the other for later, and they've already done it. They separate the money out. They might have put $600,000 or $300,000 over here, you know, for life settlement. Then they may have $250,000 in annuities.
Mm. Okay,
and
so
you get those already set up. So they're going to do it both ways.
It kind of sounds like the more money that people have to, quote unquote, play with, they may do life settlements just to kind of have the larger profits maybe simmering on the back burner. But for the stability and the consistency, they go with annuities at the same time. Is that?
Yes, a lot of them do. Okay. They'll separate the money and they'll tell me how much they want to do. And then I had some people the other day that retired. They put a large amount in the annuity and then $250,000 in life settlements, which is backwards. You know, most people do it the other way. But it depends what their situation is. Do they need cash every year? If they don't, they're going to put more money into life settlements. Because remember, a life settlement pays over 1% a month. Usually, if it's a 26-month, it's going to pay 30%.
Mm.
And remember, we've escrowed for the premium. Premium sometimes it doesn't have any premium. So sometimes it's paid up. Sometimes they're so sick, they've got a rider on their policy that says if you get to a certain point, there's no premium for the rest of your life, however long you're going to live. So there's all kinds of things that may come with your policy. And remember, all the money's always at Nevada Trust. They are the trustee. They handle your money. Your money's always there with them. And they verify every transfer.
Which is important.
That's really important. Oh, yeah. My gosh, it's important. Because all these crooks out there now are trying to get your bank account number. They're trying to transfer your money out of your account. And what happens is you may start to send an email. And if you get two letters wrong, and you click on the wrong thing, they could get your information that easy.
Oh, yeah. They're very tricky about some of the emails. They look very official. And so to prevent
that, you need to always look at them. If you get an email, like a couple weeks ago, they thought it was from us, and it wasn't. We were hacked.
Yeah.
So you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, I know. And they count on people. One, emotion is one thing that people rely on, scammers, because they count on people to be like, oh, my gosh, this is scary. What do I do? And they panic and they just start clicking things. And then the other thing is that most of the time people are so busy and multitasking and doing all these things. We don't give 100% of our attention to, say, a particular email or a text or whatever it is. And one or two letters might be just backwards that the scammers will put in there, and our brain just fixes it, and we don't think about it. We're going a million miles an hour. And so it's important not only to look at those things, but it's also nice to know that there's an actual human being at Nevada Trust that will call you and say, hey, we noticed this. Is this really your intention? Do you really want to do this? Or, you know, did you click something and didn't mean to? Or having that extra human verification is it's a rare thing, but it's really necessary in today's
world.
Let
me tell you something. The bank will not do that. The bank's just going to let whatever flows on through your account.
Yeah.
Take your money, you know. We hear about it every day. But so far, Nevada Trust absolutely calls them every transfer to see if you authorized it.
Yeah.
And when we tell them you've authorized a payment, they're going to verify that. And we always say, okay, here is the confirmation from the client. And we want that confirmation saying, transfer this out, put me in that policy, do this with my money. We want to be sure you always put in writing to us.
Yeah.
And that way there's never a discrepancy.
Yeah.
And that's what Nevada Trust is so good at. And we really like them. Also, when your money's just sitting there waiting to go into a policy, they're paying interest on it. It's almost 4%.
Mm.
It was 4. I think it's a little bit less now. But you're getting interest all the time on your deposits. And the banks don't do that.
Mm-mm.
They don't just pay you money for having it there. That's the least thing they want to do is pay you for having your money there. Yeah. They want to get as many freebies as they can where they can loan that money out and make some money. And I understand that. That's what they're there for.
And when we talk about life settlements, it's like one of the things that I don't know if people necessarily put all the pieces together. We just know that, you know, we talk about it being, it's a conservative investment. You're not in the stock market or anything like that. You don't have to worry about losing your principal, everything that you've got. It's in a life insurance company. And we know that when a policy matures, then it matures at 100%. It's not that they pay out 60% or 50% based on some economic situation. The policy matures, it pays out 100%, and they have the reserves on hand. It's not like they have to go borrow it or, you know, give me 30 days or 90 days and we'll raise the money. And, you know, no. They have all the reserves on hand, which is what makes life settlements so, I guess,
that's right. And these are huge life companies, 50 billion, 60 billion. We're not talking about $1 million or two. We're talking about billions of dollars. They've been in business 100 years. They're stable. You know, we know them. We know who they are. They're rated A by Best and Company and all these others. So they're very well thought of. They're huge, and they could pay any amount tomorrow that they had to pay. And the nice thing about life insurance companies is they're not out here loaning money out like banks are.
Yeah.
So they're a lot more stable than a bank.
Yeah. And nothing affects it. You know, we talk about, you know, banks. We talk about, you know, real estate before. We've talked about gold. We've talked about REITs. We've talked about crypto. We've talked about all kinds of different types of investments. And pretty much anything that, at least I can think of, that's not a life settlement really kind of depends on market situations and trends and all these external factors. But with a life settlement, nothing affects it. So if there's something that breaks out overseas or the market in China, you know, bottoms out and we end up with a ripple effect and the U.S. market bottoms out, a life settlement is not affected by anything at all.
No, it's not because it's in a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
Thank goodness it's not in the stock market. It's not in, you know, XYZ stock. I wouldn't want it to be in anything in the stock market. I would not want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I've always told that story how I lost $60,000 in 1 week and it cured me. It didn't take long for me to see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
You know? I went to him, I said, "How is this possible? I want my money back." And they just laughed. I said, "You know, we're not responsible. We invested it, so what? We lost your money. It's just tough."
Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, I remember back in 2008 when that happened and people were talking about, "Oh, where did all my money go?" And then it was...
They were hysterical, yes. Let me tell you. I had people come in my office in 2008 crying.
Yeah.
Because they had lost $250,000 because they told them to sell their stock. And the stockbroker thought he's smarter than the client and didn't sell it. And there wasn't a thing they could do about it.
Mm-mm. No, those brokers, they can do anything they want to, and there is pretty much no recourse for anything. And
yeah,
if it's gone...
Yeah, when you put it in there, you say, you don't know you're saying it, but you're saying, "Here's carte blanche, you can do whatever you want with my money." And
yep.
They do.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad.
Yeah, and sometimes the broker's interests are not in the investor's interest, and so
that's right. You know, I read about that all the time, where the broker had all these companies that he needed to sell their stock because he had, you know, underlying things on it. He sold them theirs when he should have been selling them other stocks, and so the client lost, but they got paid the commission.
Yeah, yeah. So
it can happen to you. You know, it's as good as the people are.
Yeah. And these days, I don't know that I trust a lot of people as far as I can throw them.
Sometimes it's better to think that, let me tell you.
Yeah, just signing on the air of caution here, but, you know, it is what it is. So, I mean, but that's the thing with the life settlement, is there are so many government regulations. There are so many different layers of, I don't know, can we say protection, security, regulation? What's the right word?
Well, it is regulated. That's why you must be accredited to do a life settlement. They want sophisticated people who have money to do it. They don't want Joe Blow over here that makes $50,000 a year. He can't do it.
Hmm.
And so it protects the small investor because they cannot do a life settlement. You have to be worth $1 million without your house, or you have to make $200,000 a year. So it's not for a little investor that makes $50,000 a year.
Yeah. There are other investments for that, but it's not just to be
it's
mean.
Not a live settlement, yeah, because
yeah.
the government says no.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, people that are not meet the criteria, they cannot do it.
Yeah, and that's to protect the investor. It's not just somebody wants to be a jerk. It's really to protect investors, making sure that, you know, this is not your last $50. If you want to do that, Vegas might be an option, but not a life settlement.
But you know what? You can go down to the local stockbroker deal, and they don't care what you're worth.
No, they don't.
If you've got the money, you can play.
Yeah, they're not necessarily looking out for your best interests, so...
I mean, they have a different interest than you do.
They do.
I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Their interest is not the same, folks.
Yeah. I know. All it took for you was, what, that 60,000 in the stock market?
I lost 60,000. It cured me.
Yeah. And sadly, it takes many people much more than that and much more time. I know you've had people that have come to you before, and they said, hey, we've been investing in the stock market for 25 years, and we thought we were doing great. We looked at our portfolio, and it turns out we were making nowhere near what we were thought we were. And then after 25 years, that's not the kind of surprise that you want to have. So
no, you don't need that kind of shock.
No.
It hurts the nervous system.
Yes. Sometimes they remember the ups and don't always remember the downs. But with a life settlement, you don't have those downs because you have those certain things in place. As you say, it's a great opportunity for people to protect their principal, which is what's
That's
most
right.
important.
And you know what you're going to make when you do the policy. You know
yeah.
that it's set already up. If it says it's 25, that's what you get. If it's 30%, you get 30. And it may take longer than what you thought, or it may come in early.
Yeah.
It may be a 24-month, a 30%. It always pays more than 1% a month.
Yeah.
But it always will not pay less than 1% a month.
So comparing life settlements and annuities, I'm going to try to characterize this briefly and to the point. With a life settlement, correct me if I'm wrong, a life settlement, your profit margins are bigger, but you have to wait, and it's not consistent. You can't put it on a calendar. The policy matures when it matures. With an annuity,
exactly right.
You know when you can have your payouts, and they're a little bit more consistent. Is that a proper...
It's very consistent. When you do an annuity, it's so many years, and you know you've got that protection. You know your principal's protected. You know that your heirs are protected. They're going to get it lump sum or payout, whichever they choose, when you die. It's already written in stone. You know that it mirrors the stock market. It's not in the stock market, and that's what is so great about it. If the stock market goes down, this has a hold on it. It never goes down. It may not make any money for a month or two, but it will not lose you any money.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the year, it locks in the profit every year.
Yeah. And then you've got your bonuses on top of that. So
that's right. Plus what you make.
Yeah.
It's just a bonus. It's in addition to what you make that first year.
Yeah. It's just money on top of money. It's compound interest. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like it's one of those things that people can set it and forget it, live your life, let your annuity do its thing and not worry about really anything, which is.
Well, and remember, it's tax deferred until you start taking it out. So the money is growing compound interest and you're not paying any taxes till you start writing those checks out.
Yeah. And that's another thing. You know, people don't always think about the tax implications. So this is another win-win for investors. It's just...
That's exactly right.
I see now.
I love tax deferral. That's a great deal.
Yeah. You should make up bumper stickers and say that. I love tax deferred.
That's right. I love tax deferred. I'll bet we could make some money selling those stickers. I love tax deferred.
Sure. Pretty soon we'll start seeing people like spray painting on walls for tax deferral. Call Faye Bagby.
There you go. I love that.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
We're going to talk about Cisco, Texas.
All right.
Little bitty town, you know, started out as a railroad town. You know, I've noticed that most of the little towns started out with a railroad. Have you noticed that?
You know, now that you pointed out, it does seem that way, yes.
And the population over there is about 3,800 people. Not a lot. I mean, you know, it's a small town. It's on the highway. It's there at Interstate 20 and 183. That's northwestern Eastland County. And its history goes back to 1878. Mm. And the Reverend C.G. Stevens arrived. He established the post office, then a church, and called the frontier settlement Red Gap. There was only six families that were there. And in 1881, the Houston, Texas Central Railroad crossed the Texas and Pacific. And they'd come through the year before. And it was Red Gap. And the people said, we'll move their town over to the crossing. So they did. When the trains crossed, they just moved the homes and everything over there to be by the railroad, you know. And so 3 years later, they recognized it, and they said, we're going to change the name to Cisco for John Cisco, a New York financier. He was responsible for the building of the Houston and Texas Central.
Oh.
And then the railroads continued to influence the development and the lots, and the railroad then sold the lots to immigrants. And then they got them a brochure and touting the town as the gate city of the West. So then your settlers arrived, and they had agriculture agents. And again, they were employed by the railroad, and they told them what to plant and then provided the seed even.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So then during the 1880s, Mrs. Halls, she built and managed the first hotel. Then Mrs. J.D. Alexander bought the first millinery and fancy goods for the town. And then the religious groups came in, and they all met in one church. Now, can you imagine
really?
The Baptists, the Methodists, and the Catholics all meeting together?
No, I can't imagine that. I literally can't see that happening at all.
And so they were having prayer meetings in the schoolhouse. And then, just like all churches, everyone said, we have to have a separate church. So then they started building the separate churches. Then by 1892, they not only had two newspapers, a bank, and it was ranching, fruit farming, which I've never heard of, and the Limestone Coal and Iron Company.
Hmm.
Then they built a broom factory, then a roller corn company, and flour mills. And they had 56 businesses.
Really?
In this little bitty town, 56.
Wow, that's impressive.
I was very impressed. Then on April 28th, 1893, an L-4 tornado struck the town and leveled all the buildings, killed 28 people, and destroyed and damaged every building in town.
Oh, my word.
The city hall, every church, the school, 500 homes were destroyed back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It destroyed the town. They had to rebuild and start over. Then Conrad Hilton came to town with Hilton Hotels. He said, I want to buy a bank. He couldn't afford the bank, even him. And so instead of doing that, he purchased the Mobley Hotel in 1919 and changed it to Hilton Hotels. In this little bitty town, they had a Hilton Hotel in Cisco, Texas.
Fancy.
I mean, can you imagine?
Wow.
And then in the 1920s, petroleum boom town hit. and Cisco played a minor role in it, but the population grew rapidly, and they said it got as high as 15,000, but
really?
It didn't stay that way. And then in 1925, they had the first annual meeting of the West Texas Historical Association. It was held there. Then in 1924, they moved at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene. And it stayed there till 1998, and it moved to Texas Tech University in Lubbock.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of things happened in Cisco. And then, and I believe it was 1927, December 23rd, the people decided to rob the bank. It was called the Santa Claus Bank Robbery. It was on December 23rd. You know they needed money for Christmas because they were going to rob the bank.
Yeah.
And the guy's name was Marshall Ratliff and his gang. They attempted to rob the First National. And, of course, it would fail. They were not able to get the money. So I guess they went to prison. It doesn't tell me a lot about those robbers. It just said they tried to rob the bank.
Wow. That'll put then, my Santa's naughty
that, ass. That put you, yeah, can you imagine? And then in the early days, they had very little water there. In the 1920s, they built the Williamson Dam north of town, and it formed Lake Cisco. The dam was named after James Milton Williamson, the mayor and survivor of the 1893 tornado.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and its base was built and billed as the largest concrete swimming pool in the world.
Really?
In Cisco, Texas, little tiny place. And they had a two-story building with skating rink, a zoo, an amusement park, and a park.
Neat.
And Bob Wills is the only one of the celebrities that ever entertained there.
Really?
Yeah, Bob Wills.
Huh.
And it was a major attraction for the folks from miles around. The dam is at one time open to the public, but now it's closed down. The pool closed in the 70s.
Oh.
And the skating rink burned down. But can you imagine they had the largest pool in the world?
I can't believe that. In
little old town that doesn't have 3,000 or 4,000 people now. The skating rink burned down. The dam was closed, and the swimming pool is no more. But they had the biggest swimming pool in the world. And all these people, there wasn't enough people hardly to go swimming there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. And then Conrad Hilton had bought the Mobley Hotel, changed it to a Hilton. It probably had, 20 rooms, 15? just a few rooms. I don't know why Conrad Hilton wanted a Hilton Hotel in Cisco, Texas.
I don't know. Maybe he saw something that everybody didn't. I don't know. But it's...
Well, he came to town to buy a bank, and he said the bank cost too much. He couldn't buy it. I can't imagine as wealthy as he was.
Yeah, you would think.
And he said, no, he couldn't afford it. He'd just buy the hotel.
Just buy the hotel instead. Wow. It's almost like they were rowing uphill. The odds were against him. I mean, the tornado came in, wiped out the entire town. The skating rink burned down. Pool closed.
That's right. And the dam closed.
And the dam closed.
So that took care of tourists coming or people coming, you know, to use the lake because the dam was closed.
Yeah.
The swimming pool closed. Then the dadgum skating rink burned down. And I don't know what happened to the railroads. I don't know if the railroads are still there or not, but you know, they crossed those railroads there, and that's when they got up to the 15,000 mark. But and I don't think there's hardly any people there today.
Yeah.
The town is only 4.9 miles, square miles. I mean, it's very small.
Yeah. Wow.
And they say they have 3,800 people there now.
I can't even imagine. 3,800 people in a four-mile...
Right. Yeah, a four-mile area there. 1,300
wow.
households.
Jeez.
I mean, can you imagine? And But way back then, they built all those different churches. That's what was so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, for 2 years, they went to church together. Then they said, oh, no, we've got to get separate churches. We can't have all this doing this.
I'm surprised it took that long to separate them. My word.
But they have a two-year college there, and it was established in 1940.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, when 1893, the tornado came and wiped out the entire town.
Wiped out everything.
I just
500 houses and all the businesses.
Jeez.
Now, they say the average income there is $24,000.
Really? Wow.
So they don't make a lot of money there.
No.
But they probably don't need to. They've, they've got the college. The kids can go to college. I don't know how they afforded that. Maybe, I don't know. Oh, yeah. It's been there since 1940.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of seems like I'm surprised when the entire town got wiped out that they went ahead and rebuilt. Most people would have just walked away and said, nah, that's a sign. We're out. We can't do it. But then they rebuilt it, and it sounds like it just, I mean, it, relatively speaking, it thrived. I mean, you don't just have the biggest pool ever and be considered to be nothing. I mean, there's some recognition that needs to be brought to these people. And so,
and I don't have a picture of all the churches, but the First Baptist was a two-story building.
Really? A two-story?
Yeah, it shows it was.
They
had a telephone building. You know, like the old telephone exchanges?
Yeah. Where the people would sit there and plug in the patches and
that's
all
right.
That.
And they had the Mobley Hotel had a historical marker there.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, and then they built another hotel back then. It was called Laguna Hotel. Yeah. And downtown looked like it had several businesses, you know. That they had rebuilt, because it's just, I can't believe it. They destroyed all those homes, 28 people, and 500 houses.
And you know,
we don't know where they got the money to rebuild all that.
Yeah. I mean, not only the money, but the resources and the will to do it. Too.
Yeah, I mean, who was a builder there?
Yeah,
or did they rebuild their own houses?
I don't know. It's quite fascinating. And you know, back then, 28 people killed in a big, huge tornado like that. All those people were connected in some way, so everybody had to have known almost everybody else there. You would think, and so it was real
and
personal.
Did you know they had another tornado in 2015? And it was just south of the city.
Oh, no.
And it destroyed several homes. It killed one person and injured more than one.
Oh,
and that was in 2015. Another one came.
Wow. So literally lightning struck twice in the same
spot.
It
struck twice, and that's unusual.
Yeah, that is unusual, especially for that area, I would think. I mean, I could see it in Kansas City or parts of, you know, Tornado Alley, but boy, oh boy, that just seems a little bit strange to me, but what do I know? So,
well, and you know, I'm always telling you about notable people
that
came from these towns. Now, Daryl Dash Cross, the music deal Seals and Cross, was born there.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Now, that's
now
pretty
then,
cool.
Okay, Leslie Turner, 1899 to 1988. She was an animator and father of the Gerber baby.
Whoa, wow, really? Now that's
and
cool.
Stan, isn't that cool? And then Stan Williams, an NFL player, was born there.
Really?
And one other one, Jean Porter, the actress.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that we had four or five famous even there. You know, there's just all kinds of famous Texans born in these little bitty towns.
Yeah. Enos still holds the record, I think, but
Enos holds the record. More people are famous from there than any place I've ever seen.
Yeah. Boy, again, every week I add one more place to put on my list of places to go, and now Cisco is on the list as well. I want
to. And it won't take you long to go through Cisco.
No.
It's so small, it'll take you about an hour to do this. First, you'll have to go to the museum. That'll take longer.
Yeah. And if you stop to eat something.
Then you've got to go see the monument.
Yeah. I wonder if the Hilton is still there or if they got rid of it.
No, it's not.
It's gone.
It's still there. Yeah, it's gone. But in its heyday, it was there several years.
Yeah.
I mean, a Hilton right there in a little tiny town.
How Conrad Hilton ever found that place and to put one up there, I don't know how that ever happened, but
I don't know either, because, you know, they were from back east. He wasn't from here.
No. He had to, I mean, you have to go find places like that. It's not just something you stumble on and say, hey, this would be a fun little place to put a hotel. Of course.
That's exactly right. And he really wanted the bank, but he said it's wanted too much money for it.
Wow.
And we don't know how they started that bank. We've never done a story on all these little banks, how they got the money together to open them.
Yeah.
And I always wonder about that. How did they come up with enough money to start a bank?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, that's got to come from someplace. I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And, you know, who owned it? And that financier, you know, came from some other state that put up the money, you know, to start the gin and all this other stuff. For people to buy lots.
Yeah.
Remember, he was the president of the railroad, and he sold the lots.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating also that people had their houses, and then the railroad came through, and they picked them up and moved them.
Yeah, they had to move everything over because of the railroad.
Now, that's kind of cool, especially for back then. That was pretty genius. I don't know how they did it.
It doesn't talk about any restaurants or cafes. They would have been cafes back then.
Yeah.
But they never mentioned any of those.
Yeah, or possibly a saloon here or there.
No, they didn't even talk about saloons or body girls.
Nothing. Wow. Oh, my God. Where did people eat and you know, do stuff? And they had a lot of things there and still do, I guess. But, boy.
But it didn't mention any place to eat, and that's strange.
That is a little strange.
And all these places I know had two or three little cafes. They couldn't have all eaten at home all the time.
You wouldn't think. Of course, maybe it could be that's an opportunity. You know, go there and open up a restaurant or a cafe or a bakery or a barbecue joint.
Now, this is modern times. They bound to have a lot of that now.
You'd
because
think.
They have a college. Anybody that has a college is pretty well educated.
That's true. There's got to be people there going for college, so there has to be something. I don't know. I'd kind of like to go see it just to kind of like look around and imagine what it was, see what it is now.
The college, remember, the college is a 2-year college.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Not a 4-year. You got to get a quick education and get out of there.
Yeah. You're in and you're out. It's just a pit stop on the highway.
I think so.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is.
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I know a lot of these places you'll talk about. It's like a weekend trip. It'll take you several days to get through it. This one is probably in and out. So a
That's
quick
right.
weekend
I'll have
trip.
To give you another town to kind of mosey through at the same time.
Mosey
I'll
through.
I'll work on that.
Wow. All right, before we wrap, I know with life settlements, we quickly touched on accreditation, but there are two risks that people need to know about. What's the first one?
The first risk is it could go over, and you need to know what the premium is. So we always tell you up front when we approach you to go in the policy, we tell you then how much the premium will be where you won't have any surprises. The second thing is, remember, you do not get paid until the end, and you get your principal and interest when the policy matures and they pass away.
Okay.
And then, of course, remember also, you must be accredited. You must make $200,000 a year, or You must be worth $1 million, and that's without your house.
And those are the regulations for life settlements. Annuities are not exactly the same.
No, it's not near as hard, but you need to have money in the bank, like a savings account. You have to have money to pay your monthly bills, plus you have to have a fund. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you've got to have some money in savings.
You need a basic foundation. Yeah,
you have to have a foundation. In case of emergency, you have to have emergency money.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. All right. It doesn't matter what the investment is.
So for people who are looking to take, and either one, whether it's a life settlement or an annuity, both of these are conservative investments designed for people to make money, even when, like, the stock market is down or any other condition, you know, happens that affects all these other types of investments like stock market, real estate, whatever. If you're looking for something consistent and conservative, either one is a great option. That's all you do is conservative investments with life insurance companies. So,
right. Whereas we know your money will be safe.
Exactly.
So your money, you know that it goes directly into that policy. It doesn't go in my pocket.
Yeah.
Remember, when you put up money, we use it to pay the person for their policy. That's how your investment works.
Good point. Good point. I'm glad you pointed that out. All right. So for people who are interested or they want some more information, they do need to give you a call and set up an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, again, is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.